This is John Howell Essential Cuts, your daily rundown of the best of the best from today's show on 890 WLS.
Yesterday, we were talking a bit about, why not just get the coronavirus now, this variant? Get it over with. It's a mild variant, right? And it can boost immunity. When I was a kid, we used to have chickenpox parties, right? And I said at that time, there were five good reasons why that's an exceedingly bad idea. And a lot of you didn't believe me, which I find hard to believe. But I thought we'd get an expert on here and let her try to reason with you and why you should not go out and attempt to get the virus. Just, it's going to get you, let's be honest. It's not really if, it's when, but forestall it as long as you can. Dr. Diane Lauderdale will be here in just a second. The idea of intentionally trying to catch Omicron is all the rage nowadays, and it's catching on like wildfire, as we mentioned yesterday. Now Dr. Diane Lauderdale joins us here. She's an epidemiologist and the chair of the public health sciences at University of Chicago. Doctor, thank you for your time this afternoon. I'm assuming that you agree this is an exceedingly bad idea.
Yes, it is. It is a bad idea, although I completely understand why people are feeling this way right now.
Years ago, parents would arrange to have chicken pox parties for their kids in those days, ostensibly because kids could fight off chicken pox much easier than adults, but that doesn't factor into coronavirus, does it?
No. I mean, the thinking behind that, I'm sure, is behind people's thinking that they might as well just get this over with. So people are seeing that lots of people are getting the Omicron variant right now, are getting COVID right now. Even people who've been vaccinated and boosted are getting it. So if it seems inevitable, wouldn't it be better to just get it over with so you didn't have to keep living your life worrying about being infected?
But as you mentioned, the fact is that people who have already had the virus are getting reinfected, and people that have had the vaccination and the boosters still catch coronavirus now, this variant, but they don't necessarily, more often than not, need hospitalization, so it's still worth getting the vaccine, obviously.
Yes, the vaccine, people who are vaccinated, especially vaccinated and boosted, are in general having mild infections or at the least not needing to go into the hospital. So the whole range of severity, and there is a range across the population, is much less severe for the vaccinated than the people who have not been vaccinated, for whom it probably is more similar to the original COVID.
I hear from listeners every day, hey, John, this is nothing more than just a bad cold coronavirus. Can you knock that down for us?
There are people who've been vaccinated and boosted who are getting Omicron, and it is just like a bad cold. But there are, especially for the non-vaccinated, it can be a severe illness. And for some people who've been vaccinated, it has also been a severe illness. And that's part of why it's not a good idea to just get it over with, because some people are getting really sick. Some people are going to inadvertently pass it on to children too young to be vaccinated or really vulnerable adults if they intentionally get sick before they realize they're sick. So there are real dangers to going ahead and thinking you should just go ahead and get it.
How big of a problem is it for people who develop long COVID?
Omicron has not been around long enough to know the answer to that. We haven't seen people who've had it 2 months ago yet.
Do you think that this will just be the latest in a series of variants that we're going to have to deal with as this pandemic becomes an endemic?
I think that answering that question might be a test of someone's personality. I'm an optimist, and so I keep hoping that it will subside, that there will not, if there are new variants, they will not end up being worse than the current ones, but we have no guarantees of that. So I have no idea what the answer to that question really is.
Dr. Lauderdale, I've read anywhere between 30 and 50% of our healthcare system nationally is under high stress now. Can you corroborate that? I mean, are ICU beds pretty much gone?
So this is another really important reason why you should try to avoid getting sick right now. The medical system is in a very difficult situation. The hospital beds, ICUs are full all over the country, but it's much worse than that because a real percentage, you know, like 10, 20, 30% of the medical workforce of doctors and nurses and the other health professionals are themselves in isolation at home, even if they're not particularly ill, because they have contracted COVID. So the hospitals and medical centers are just having a really tough time taking care of this very full hospital. People are getting reassigned to different units that they're not usually in, and it's a bad time to need medical care right now.
I hear every day from listeners who tell me that wearing a mask does absolutely no good. What are your thoughts on wearing a mask?
How do they know that? How can they possibly know that? Because they're not living the same life with and without a mask. So there is very good evidence, some recent scientific studies that actually looked at how far aerosols could travel when people spoke or coughed and they were wearing a mask or not wearing a mask and wearing different kinds of masks. And the mask dramatically cut down on how far aerosol traveled when you spoke, just ordinary speaking, and when you coughed. So the masks do make a difference, both from keeping someone who is infected from infecting others, but also protecting the person who's wearing it. So they're working on both sides.
Why does Mother Nature keep causing so much trouble for the human race?
That might be above my pay grade to answer. It's a good question. I mean, there are lots of humans. We're in contact with lots of animals. Most of the new viral problems come about because they jump from an animal population to a human population. So sort of new ways of living in the environment have this risk attached to them.
Yeah. Doctor, thank you for your time and your expertise. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. I enjoy talking to you.
This is John Howell, Essential Cuts on 890 WLS.
Famously, Rahm Emanuel always said that never let a crisis go to waste. He had a major crisis with the shooting of Laquan McDonald as he was leaving his second term.
As mayor, my administration made it a priority to bring the world to Chicago and Chicago to the world.
Well, okay, he did bring a lot of business to Chicago, but even he admitted during his confirmation hearings for our ambassadorship to Japan that it might have been a little bit about him.
I thought I was addressing the issue, and I clearly missed the level of distrust and skepticism that existed, and that's on me.
I think John Harris is a terrific writer, Politico's founding editor. This caught my eye today, why the left could not destroy Rahm Emanuel. After Emanuel limped to the end of his two controversy-packed terms as Chicago mayor, many people assumed that he would be consigned to the ash heap, the irrelevance, essentially. Some critics, especially on the Democratic left, thought a sullen fadeaway was too good for Emanuel. He deserves someplace a bit hotter to spend his political afterlife. Well, less than 3 years later, he's not going into oblivion. He's not going to hell. He's going to Tokyo. Let's start there with John Harris. John, welcome back to Double Desk, sir. How are you?
Hey, nice to hear your voice.
And likewise, sir. It's always great reading you, and I enjoy having you on the program. Well, the far left certainly gave the president plenty of warnings that they did not want Rahm Emanuel to take the ambassadorship. And yet, while some politicians, especially at this stage in their life, would say, okay, if I'm not wanted, I'm not going to make myself a pest. Why is Rahm Emanuel different? What sort of personality traits does he have where he can shake off this criticism and say, up yours, I'm going?
Well, as you know, in Chicago, he's just wired differently than most politicians. Like, from a young age, he had a hunger to be in the action, and now even as he's rather advanced in his career, I think Mayor Emanuel's maybe 62, he still has this incredible drive to be in the game. He can't not be in the game. I think there's a lesson maybe for other politicians in this, however, which is that he doesn't bow to what everyone says he should do. Often in this hyper media environment, You know, there'll be a clamor, this person must resign, this is the biggest deal in the world. I think politicians with real self-confidence say, I don't care what everybody says I should do, I'm staying put, I'm not going anywhere. It takes a lot of nerve to do that, but if you have it, I think Rahm shows that you can actually survive a lot more than might be obvious.
Did he start developing that sort of scar tissue when Clinton was impeached?
You know, even before that, I first met Rahm Emanuel in 1995 when I started covering the Clinton White House for the Washington Post. And at that time, Emanuel was like trying to fight his way back in into the inner circle after basically being shoved aside. At one point in 1993, Hillary Clinton, as First Lady, wanted him gone. And the then Chief of Staff, Mac McCarthy, came to Rahm and said, you know, maybe you'd be happier with a job over at the Democratic National Committee. He said, nope, I'm not going. If you want me out of here, Bill Clinton's got to tell me himself. Of course, Emanuel knew that probably Bill Clinton wouldn't do that. He hated the kind of unpleasant personnel conversations, kind of conflict-averse. So Emanuel stayed put at the White House. He was without influence for, you know, several months. But then just by sheer drive, sheer tenacity, next thing you know, he kept proposing ideas, making them happen. By the end of the Clinton years, he was one of the most powerful aides that Bill Clinton had. He just said no. Don't take the hint. That's one of the lessons of Rahm.
Yeah, don't take the hint. So Al Franken took the hint. He regrets that. But, and I had not heard this story until I read your column today, and this is John Harris from Politico. You should check this out. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, I never thought he would survive the, it was a blackface crisis, you know, a scandal.
Yeah.
And yet, did he see Rahm Emanuel on TV and decide to dig his heels in?
Yes, that's what I learned from my reporting. I think Rahm was on the Bill Maher show or something like that. He said, look, Governor Ralph Northam should apologize. He should take responsibility, but he shouldn't quit. He was elected by the voters, and he shouldn't be chased out by the news media, by what people are saying online on Twitter. He should have the confidence to stay right there. And as it happened, Governor Northam saw this. I'm not saying that that was his decision was driven principally by Rahm, but he saw it and actually called Rahm to thank him. And in fact, Governor Northam didn't resign. He certainly came very close, but he didn't. He finished out his term just a couple of weeks ago here in Virginia to generally favorable reviews. That illustrates you can withstand some of these controversies, even huge ones, if you've got the poise and the discipline to do so.
John Harris, you write that Rahm Emanuel has the soul of a hack. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, and you know, I meant it as a compliment, not an insult. You know, when I say hack, what I'm really talking about is he's a political operative. That's how he got his start in politics. He was a fundraiser. He was a strategist for the House Democrats. You know, he's somebody with a very ground level understanding of how to drive a news story, how to raise money, how to pick a candidate who's likely to be most competitive, how to support that candidate with the right media strategy. He thinks like an operative, and he's continued to think that way and act that way. You know, years past the point where he could say, look, I'm a principal now, right? I've been a member
of Congress, beneath me.
I've been the mayor of Chicago, yeah. I've been a White House chief of staff. I'm no longer down at the nitty-gritty level like that. He doesn't do that. He knows that in this in our current political culture, actually operatives often have even more influence than principals do because they're closer to the action. They're closer to driving the story.
And you wrote in your column, too, and this is John Harris from Politico.com, that he still works the phones and used to repeatedly call you on Sunday mornings just to pick your brains about, you know, another politician or a scandal or a policy item. And he's never stopped working. He is a political hack. But, again, that's a compliment.
Yeah, you know, it gives him relationships. It gives him an understanding of power dynamics, who's trying to knife who. That somebody who's you know, up at 30,000 feet, surrounded by you know, a retinue of aides, like they often lose that kind of uh, that kind of fingertips understanding of politics. Rahm never has. I think that's one of the reasons he's in this job. He never stopped pushing it.
His confirmation came with a vote of 48-21, meaning 31 senators didn't even vote, just abstained from voting. What does that tell you? He's not a very popular guy, obviously, with Republicans because he's ostensibly a Democrat, but not really with Democrats on the left because he's considered to be a Democrat name only.
Yeah, that's true, although he worked it hard, and in the end, he only lost three Democrats. And that's pretty impressive when you consider that some of the most prominent voices on the left, people like AOC, were warning Biden, look, he's radioactive, don't give him anything. He's exactly what's wrong with the Democratic Party. Biden didn't listen to that. He knew Emanuel pretty well from the bitter years in the Obama White House, and he stood by him. And, you know, even those 31 senators who didn't vote, I think a lot of them didn't want to cast a no vote against Emanuel. They just wanted to skip it. And he did get a lot of Republican support, people like Roy Blunt of Missouri, Rob Portman of Ohio. To me, it shows they're actually, it's pretty frayed, it's pretty fragile, but there's still a center in American politics on some types of issues.
Do you think Biden wishes there were more Rahm Emanuels still in Congress, especially in the Senate, you know, a balance between pragmatism and ideology?
Oh, I imagine he does. You know, he doesn't want more Joe Manchins in the Senate or Kristen Sinemas, that's for sure. But President Biden is somebody who respects practical politicians, and that's what Rahm Emanuel is. He's a practical politician.
And he knows how to make money. I read some of the, he had to file some financials for this ambassadorship. He's made an extraordinary amount of money since leaving the fifth floor here in Chicago. Do you think he has bigger plans ahead, or is this just the cherry on the sundae of public service?
You know, it's a really good question. You know, historically, this job has gone for more elder statesmen, people like Walter Mondale after serving as vice president, you know, Carolyn Kennedy, a show of respect to the Kennedy family for her to be appointed. Way back in the old days, you'll probably remember Senator Mike Mansfield, very distinguished senator, Senate Majority Leader, but he finished his career in Tokyo. So is this a sort of a swan song for Rahm? With anyone else, I'd say yes, it is. Knowing Rahm, knowing that he's always looking for ways to get back in the action, he wants to be in the arena, I'd have to guess that he probably hopes there's something else after this.
John Harris from Politico.com, thank you very much, sir. I urge all of you listening to check out his column. It's a great column. Every week at Politico.com. John, thanks for popping on. Much appreciated.
Thanks. Let's talk again soon.
Take care.
I thought I was addressing the issue, and I clearly missed the level of distrust and skepticism that existed. And that's on me.
But he just withstood the criticism. On and on he goes.
You're listening to John Howell, Essential Cuts, on 890 WLS.
Going through my Daily Herald this morning, I saw an awful long article written by Jake Griffin. He's done kind of a inventory of the major big box stores in the suburbs primarily, but it's true in the city as well, all across the state, obviously. Meijer Grocery Store in St. Charles has some shelves full, others are completely empty. Supply issues are a problem for Target and Batavia, on and on the list goes. If you can't seem to find what you're looking for in many stores once again, guess what? You're not alone. It's deja vu. And this happened just as we're trying to regain our balance. Let's start there with Rob Carr, president of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association and a frequent guest on this program. Well, supply chain issues, winter weather disruptions, inflation, all of the above. What do you think it is, Rob?
It's all of the above, and it's worker shortage with COVID. We're still not out of that. And I think what people, I hope people understand is that the retailers at the end of that line. Anything that occurs before it in that supply chain only builds until it gets to the retailer. And while we might be mad at the retailer, it's not the retailer's fault.
I don't think people get really mad at the retailer necessarily. There was an incident in a bar in Pilsen, I think, yesterday I read about where, you know, a doorman or a bartender was asking, I think some guys came in late and they were all liquored up already and asked for their, vaccination cards and wound up getting into a scuffle with a couple of these guys. But, you know, I don't think people are blaming the retailers for the shortages, obviously. What could politicians do right here, right now, to help the retailers in Illinois?
In terms of supply shortage or supply chain, there's really nothing they can do. This really needs just to work itself out. It will. You know, it's things that were existing even prior to the pandemic. We already had shortages, for example, with truck drivers, port workers, train workers. That exacerbated itself under COVID. I think what we're going to be working on, though, that can help retailers in terms of organized retail crime, and we're going to have something on that here in the very near future.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. I noticed that the Democrats, who know they can get hammered on the crime issue this November, they're working feverishly. The speaker is, Chris Welch, saying, oh, I'm going to have something soon that's going to really help with retail theft. What are you looking for in that initiative?
We're going to be, I think first we're looking for, in terms of, we're going to work with all the leaders, and anyone who has an interest. I think what we're trying to do is we've been raising the awareness that this is not brand new to retail. We've been dealing with organized retail crime for a decade. What is new is it's grown over 60% in the last 5 years. And what is new is law enforcement and others are really starting to realize this is connected. This is not a one-off. These aren't people who are stealing, you know, a loaf of bread to feed their family. That the proceeds from this are going to fund other illicit activities, such as purchasing, you know, guns for the streets or other illicit drugs or to fund human trafficking. Attorney General Kwame Raoul, we've been working with him and his task force he created. We were there with him at the beginning of it. He understands that, and I think others are starting to understand that as well.
Is there anything we can do to tamp down the market for stolen goods? In other words, most of these mob scenes where they grab purses, take purses, for instance, they're on the internet later that day being sold. Can we work it from the back end that way?
We can. You know, when I started my career, we worried about flea markets and pawn shops, and you still have to worry about those, or, you know, the back of the truck, or the couple of guys that were selling at a local sandwich shop in the Chicago area. You still have to worry about that, but, you know, criminals will use anything legitimate for illegitimate purposes. They're very creative. They'll figure out a way, and the Internet's one way. It's very hard for the seller to figure that out, but I think there's a couple things you can do as the seller verified. If they're not verified, if they're not, if the marketplace that they're on isn't verifying them, I'd steer away from that. And then at the end of the day, you know, is it too good to be true? If it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Rob Carr from the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, our AG, Kwame Raoul, has a new initiative. Are you happy with what he's proposing?
You talking about his task force?
Yes.
Yes. As I mentioned just a minute ago, we were with him at the beginning of that. We appreciate the fact that he's taking leadership role on that. We're continuing to cooperate with him on that, and it's already produced some fruit. I think that's one of the first steps that we're going to look at as well, is taking that now to another level in terms of law enforcement at all levels coordinating on this approach. I know Irma is working at the national level with a group called USAIT, United to Safeguard America Against Illicit Trade, but we're also working with our state partners, and we'll be working with our local partners as well, because that's really what it's going to take, is a consistent long-term approach.
I was looking for some of these N95 masks the other day. I was in a big box store in Vernon Hills, and they put up a little note saying, please be considerate of other customers and don't take every single item we have in stock. How much does consumer psychology play into this?
It does play into it. I think, you know, there's a point at which we think, oh, man, if I don't grab this now, I'm not going to see it again. And I think what we're losing perspective of sometimes is, you know, this is the single biggest disruption to the supply chain since World War II. And yet, when you talk to anybody who lived through that, we're not having the deprivations that occurred then. We might not have it the day or the moment we want it, but it's going to be there. More is going to come. We're not having to do without eggs or without flour or without sugar. You know, all of that's still going to be there. It's a question now of maybe having to wait a day longer than we had to in the past.
I said I was going to start with this question, but I'll finish with it. What can we do as consumers to help the retailers?
Well, I think, you know, consumers are generally very supportive of retailers. I think shopping in your retail stores is a good thing. I think being patient and understanding that they're, you know, when it comes to, some people don't like masks. You mentioned the bar owner who had the incident with the having to prove up vaccination. If you're a restaurant or a tavern or a movie theater, you know, we're required to prove that up. Don't take your frustration out on them. And when it comes to grocery shopping or shopping for other sundries for your home, only take what you need. There's more coming. There will be more there, you know, it'll continue to work itself out.
Rob, thanks for popping on. Short notice. We appreciate it, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association.
You're listening to John Howell, Essential Cuts on 890 WLS.
You know, when I took this gig many, many years ago, 1983, the reason I Convalvin Radio is there's a no heavy lifting, a lot of free food, and no math. But we are going to talk math regarding mortgage rates and the Fed with David Hochberg in just a couple seconds. But first, let me conclude the story out of Dallas that I saw, came across my Twitter feed. The problem with the public comments section in any open public meeting isn't necessarily the comments, it's usually the public. And this started out with a man just walked up to the microphone, and he was urging vaccine mandates in Texas, which is probably a non-starter. But he did do it. He rapped it. He rhymed it. And that caught my ear and my interest. Let's take a listen.
Vaccinate. You're going to get corona from Mona. Don't vaccinate. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. You got to vaccinate in the Lone Star State. Vaccination is so great. Vaccinate me all day long. Vaccinate your daddy and mom. Vaccinate my body. Vaccinate me at the party. A vaccine dream. I love the vaccine all day long.
Everybody gets a minute. Everybody gets a minute. That's the problem. So they have to sit through all this nonsense. I noticed that all the seats behind him, the audience had moved away from him.
I want to vaccinate your mom. I want to stick it in your arm. Oh, my, where are you? I want to vaccinate you, but you can't hear my song. Vaccination, right or wrong. Dr. Fauci, give me that ouchie. I want it in my body. Vaccinate me, too. Go to the party. Omar is back. Vaccinate me, white or black.
I mean, it's nonsensical, and it's incoherent, but I mean, it did get a lot of views today. I guess that's what counts in this day and age.
Vaccinate you. Vaccinate who? Vaccinate you all day long. Vaccinate your dad and mom. Vaccinate me, Emma. Vaccinate the mayor. I am a vaccination player. What can I say? I'm the real round sayer. Prime tap, nine and nine. I'm on the ground all the time. I blow your mind. I spit the rhyme. I commit the crime. I'm always on time because I'm nine and nine. I have a shot and I grind a shot and I blow your mind one more time. Vaccinate your mind. Vaccinate your body. Vaccinate your life and your vaccination party. I love y'all. Peace. God bless. Follow my Instagram. IG.
Your time is up.
Prime time shine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, David Hochberg, the VP of Lending at HomeSign Financial, joins us. David, I feel your commercials might even be more effective if you wrap them.
How the hell do I follow that? I mean, that's like how do I follow that? That's impossible to follow.
I didn't see a teleprompter nor a piece of paper on the podium or on the lectern. I should be correct there at all. The guy was doing that from memory. He is he's skilled. He's skilled. Yeah, what I'm not sure, but he's skilled.
What, I'm not sure. That's
have you ever crazy. Sat on a that. Have you ever sat on a school board or, you know, where you have to listen to public comments?
Yes, I've actually made public comments and had the school board look at me as if I had four heads.
My uncle was a school board member for years and years and years. This is a long time ago, decades ago. But I remember him even in those days when things weren't nearly as hyper politicized as they are now. But even in those days, he said, oh my God, everybody would take, we'd take a 10-minute break, everybody would go into the conference room, have a swig out of the flask, and then come back and take care of the public comments section.
Brace for impact.
Brace for impact. Mortgage rates have jumped again, and the proposed increase by the Federal Reserve is going to impact our pocketbooks. How badly?
It already has. The mortgage rates are up a full percentage point from where they were at this time last year. The Fed's already talking, has already said they're going to raise it short-term rates three times next year. The Goldman Sachs is predicting four times next year. What that means to every one of our listeners is that, number one, your credit card bills are going to go higher if you're carrying balances on them because those rates are variable. Your home equity line of credit payments are going to go up because those are based upon the interest rates of the T-bills, and any type of car loans and any type of short-term lending, you're going to pay more on top of the $3.89 a gallon gas that you paid $1.89 at this time last year. Things are going to get more expensive, John. It's just a fact of life.
Most important lesson here is pay down the credit cards if you can.
Critical. I have a young man right now in his late 20s. He's carrying $12,000, I'll round up, $12,000 with credit cards. His credit score was a 674. If he paid off all $12,000 on his credit cards, his credit score shot up to 708. That's a full point in a mortgage rate. The difference between a 670 something and a 708 was a full point in the interest rate of his mortgage. So it is so critical. I know our listeners, some of our listeners are still having financial challenges, but that credit score is the number one through 100 in determining the interest rate on any type of mortgage. It is critical. And if you can't afford to pay off your credit cards, at least pay them down or pay them off every single week. That's the number one quickest way to get your credit scores up, is to keep that balance down, keep the utilization high by keeping the balances low.
Reiterate how important it is. We've discussed this before, but it's been a while. Everybody, you know, deals with their credit cards at the end of the month when you pay your bills or what have you. But if you want to reestablish credit and improve your credit score, pay a little bit every week. It'll look better to the agencies.
100% right. So here, I'll give you an easy example. You've got a $1,000 limit, okay? You charge $500 a month, all right? If you wait until the bill comes and you had a big expense and you had to charge $400 a month, $400 before the $500 check cleared, you have $900 on your credit card against the $1,000 limit. You're at 90% capacity. That is a credit score crusher. That will devastate your credit score. What I always recommend, and I have recommended, and I will continue to recommend, is if our listeners, I'm not naive to think that all of our listeners have got ample funds to do this, but if you do have the funds to do this, pay your credit cards off every single Friday. If you don't have the funds to do it because you get paid every other week, then pay your credit cards off every other week if you can afford to do that. If you can't afford to do it, then just send in whatever you can afford to do on a weekly basis or a biweekly basis when you get paid, to start chipping away at that iceberg. That paying down of the credit card debt, John, is the number one thing that will help you get a little extra steroid shot to make your credit scores go up, which will in turn reduce the rates you get on a mortgage.
That's good advice. Adjustable rate mortgages.
Yep.
Percentage, ballpark. I mean, these are very, very dangerous, especially for new home buyers. They really have to have their ducks in a row and have some discipline before getting involved in that.
Yeah, but in all due respect, the adjustable rate mortgages have been a thing of the, have been a fad over the past 5 to 6 years because of the compression in the yield curve. There really hasn't been a market for adjustable rate mortgages. And those that have been in adjustable rate mortgages have been on an unbelievable ride for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
The challenge is, we are now facing rampant inflation, which we all know with the information that was released today. We know the Fed's going to start tightening monetary policy. We know the Fed's going to start increasing rates. I had three calls this week already from individuals, from listeners who have either adjustable rate mortgages or home equity line of credits that have had a great run, saying it's time to lock in and get into something fixed. Okay, and I agree with them 100%, and I would be the guy to say, hey, yeah, I'd hold it out. I'm not saying that anymore. I'm not trying to be scare tactic here. We are going into an increasing interest rate market. It's a fact. If you are in an adjustable rate mortgage and you plan on living there for a long period of time, now is the time to take a look at converting that adjustable rate mortgage or that home equity line of credit that you've got a huge balance on into a fixed rate mortgage and get into shelter for some safety.
I wish I had taken your advice years ago.
I know, John. I try to help you, but you've got your mind of your own. You do your own thing.
With your permission, do you want me to try to rap one of your next commercials just to see how it sounds?
I would like you to rap all of my commercials while you're playing the trumpet, because I hear you're a mean trumpet player. I mean, you blow the horn pretty hard.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm loud, that's for sure. Not in time and in tune, but I can play loud, that's for sure. David, thank you. Thanks for jumping on. I appreciate it. Continued success over there at Homeside Financial.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great week, bud.
You too. Take care.
This is John Howell, Essential Cuts on 890 WLS.
Our EP, Brett Gogol. Steve Travicanti is our AP. Tyler Bravo is our TD. Kim Gordon is in the newsroom with an update in just a few minutes. At the conclusion of every show, I generally say, keep calm, carry on, and keep your head on a swivel. I've been saying it for a few years. Perhaps I should say it every hour. This is a keep your head on a swivel update from the mean streets of Chicagoland. Broadview, to be specific. Jeremy Gorner at the Chicago Tribune He's their police and crime reporter, what have you. He spends a lot of time asking for police reports, open records requests, and then he goes through them. And he had this in today's Chicago Tribune. You might remember this happened a few days before Christmas on December 21st. As many as 15 gunshots were reported when the husband of Illinois State Senator Kimberly Lightford exchanged gunfire with carjackers. It's like the Wild Wild West. She is the second highest ranking state senator. Her husband, his name is Eric McKinney, and they were in Broadview, the western suburb. Nobody was hurt. That's the good news. At least we don't think anybody was hurt. They're still looking for the perps. One of them may have been hurt, may have been hit. Happened about 9:45 in the evening, and it happened just a few minutes after the Broadview Christmas event hosted by Broadview's village officials took place almost next to the scene of the crime. That's another thing that Jeremy dug up. So, reading from the Broadview police report about the December 21st carjacking, happened on the 2000 block of South 20th Avenue just off Roosevelt, or as my old friend used to say, Roosevelt. Lightford was involved in the incident, the report states. Officers arrived at the scene and took possession of McKinney's Glock 27 while they figured out what transpired. It doesn't say here if he has the weapon returned to him. I would imagine he must have by now. I don't even know if they would confiscate it after they investigated the crime. I mean, right there, then and there, because all of his paperwork was in order. He has a FOID card and a concealed carry license. McKinney showed the officers his valid firearm owner's identification card and concealed carry license. He, Lightford, his wife, and a friend were in the senator's Mercedes, a loner apparently, heading west on Roosevelt Road, and then they turned right onto 20th Avenue to drop off the friend. While they were saying goodbye, a Dodge SUV pulled in front of the Mercedes. Three guys got out. Three people. It doesn't say they were all male. Three people approached the Mercedes, all had handguns. McKinney told his wife, Lightford, to run. And we had talked about this the day after the incident, and there were a couple of quotes that she had, how traumatic it was and how it scared the you-know-what out of her. McKinney tossed the car keys into the street and backed away from the Mercedes. Take the car. It's yours. There was a retired Chicago cop. I can't remember his name. I used to have him on the radio. Used to see him on TV all the time. Had a big handlebar mustache, and he wore three-piece suits. That was his look. Can't remember his name, but I know somebody is yelling it at the radio right now. He had great advice on how to keep yourself safe on the streets of a city like Chicago. And I distinctly remember saying many times on my program, if somebody tries to hold you up and they want your car keys specifically or your wallet or your whatever, take it and throw it in the other direction and then you run. If you throw it left, you run right or vice versa. Best thing to do, because then the criminal has to decide, well, there's the wallet. There are the car keys. Or do I want to chase after this guy? He just threw what I want over this way. That's great advice. What was his name? Great guy. Reading from the police report. McKinney got a few feet away from the vehicle and stated that one subject, unprovoked, began firing their weapon, to which McKinney responded by protecting himself and fired his weapon towards the subject. This is from the police report. McKinney ran south on 20th Avenue after firing a few rounds, found cover next to a house. The alleged carjackers fired more rounds at him. I guess the senator was running a different direction at that time. Doesn't say here. McKinney could not say to the police if, in fact, he hit any of the carjackers or even the vehicle. Lightford, the senator, told officers her purse and phone were inside the Mercedes. An effort to track the phone was not successful. It was a leased Mercedes that was later found by police about two blocks south of the Ike on the west side. Broadview police went door-to-door, found many Ring cameras at multiple residences, but only found one residence who may or may not have had some video footage of the incident. The report doesn't say what it showed or if it showed anything useful. Lightford's Mercedes was identified as being a loaner from the Westmont Mercedes dealer. It did have her Senate-issued license plates on the loaner. The carjacking, as I mentioned, occurred about 30 minutes after a Christmas event hosted by Broadview's village officials, which took place within 100 yards of the scene of the crime. So that's all. That was all dug up by Jeremy Gorner at the Chicago Tribune. But, it's like the Wild West. 15 rounds, maybe more, maybe less. Nobody knows for sure. It's not in the report. But multiple gunshots. I have two pistols that I haven't fired in years at this point. One's a revolver, really easy to deal with, obviously. My brother-in-law, who has a brand-new Glock and a concealed carry license, which I'm sure he doesn't appreciate me saying on the air, but I have to get one, too, because it's reached that point where you just have to have the ability to defend yourself when something happens. Well, you need training, proper training, and statistically speaking, you know, those guns can be taken away from you and used against you. You know what? I'll take my chances at this point. I'd rather just have the tool that I may or may not need in my car, on my person, in driving around this city or Cook County, the surrounding suburbs. It doesn't matter. They just had a carjacking at Hawthorne in Vernon Hills day before yesterday. I think it was an armed carjacking. It must have been. So it's out there. I also have a nice little Beretta 22 semi-automatic. But years and years ago, I was cleaning the weapon at my kitchen table, and I did a terrific job. Followed the instructions and put it back together, and then realized that it had rolled out of view, that there was a spring that I had not put back into the weapon. So I have this Beretta, but I haven't fired it since. I think that would be imprudent.
We have some help for you on the text line, John. Is the police officer you're trying to think of?
Oh, good, good. I just remembered his name. Yeah, I won't even look at the text line. Bittenbinder.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me go take a look at that. Oh, do you remember his first name?
J.J.?
J.J. Bittenbinder. He used to have a website, and he was available for school groups and come out to your church group or what have you to talk about self-defense, like practical self-defense, not making you into a tactical officer or a Navy SEAL, just really, I thought, profoundly important, simple advice to keep yourself safe. And it begins with, yes, keep your head on a swivel. So I have to find a range to go to and a gunsmith to tell me that to throw that gun out or get rid of it or turn it in or do something or fix it. That gun was always really susceptible to jamming. I remember I'd fire a few rounds and then it'd jam, so gun's probably cooked. But I need to get myself back proficient because, hey, it's the age we live in. If you don't protect yourself, nobody else will. What is it when you're in, what's the old adage? When seconds matter, the police are still minutes away.
This is John Howell, Essential Cuts on 890 WLS.
Let's welcome to the program to explain herself, Judy Pilek, co-host of the Bruce St. James Show.
What do you guys take it up with HR?
Well, I try to stay out of the corporate fray as much as I can. I'm not easily insulted by coworkers. I mean, some people are. I'm not. But, you know, not to do the straw man game of, well, what if I said that? But if I said something like that, you know, I would get called out for it.
But would you? I don't think so.
Would I say something like that? And probably not. Do you watch Yellowstone?
I don't, but I hear that I should.
My wife loves that show, so I watched a couple episodes, Kevin Costner. I love the scenery. It's beautiful. It's set in Montana. And it's a compelling series. It's like a soap opera. There's a lot of things going on. And I've not watched the previous season, so I just picked it up, you know, this season. But I watched two or three episodes with her. And I understand why the ladies watch this, because a lot of guys in Wranglers riding around on horses, and they're all in good shape, and they're all cowboys. So I get it.
All right. So now you've convinced me I need to watch it.
Well, she used to watch that motorcycle show. What was that called?
I love that show.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. I watched that show one episode. I'm like, I hate everybody in the show. They all ought to be in prison. Why do you watch this show? And she said, don't you see these guys?
Yeah.
Bad boys.
Yeah.
I think that's why she was attracted to me and married me, because I am a bad boy, obviously.
Really? And do you have a hog? Is that what it's called?
Well, that'll get us right up to the 17th floor, HR, asking about my hog. I am Dutch.
Okay, moving along.
All right, so at the old station, I used to hear a reoccurring segment. It was called Best Buy or Judy's Best Buy or Goodbye Girl.
Goodbye Girl. That was it, yeah. Goodbye, B-U-Y, like I can get you a goodbye.
Well, it seemed to be very successful over there. Why don't we emulate that here?
Yes, we should, because it's my alter ego. It's actually me. My alter ego is probably Judy. I'm probably more the goodbye girl. Because, you know, I am all about being frugal, getting the Best Buy, never paying more than I have to.
Are you a hoarder?
I am not a hoarder. And people should not hoard, because I know we're in a shortage, but that's the worst thing to do. Because, you know, of course, it's all supply and demand. The more you hoard, the worse you're going to make it, and you don't need to.
Well, I know some people, and I won't mention her by name, but it's my mother-in-law, who has a lot of time on her hands, and she has a little cash to spend. So whenever she's near any antique store, or now it's eBay, I mean, just packages come literally every day with more and more stuff, and the old barn has essentially morphed its way into a museum. Are you in that category?
You know what? I used to. I'm still a collector, and I love vintage, and I did it for years and years because I had a much bigger house, and so that was okay. I have totally downscaled. I have a smaller house now, and as you get older, I think you get smarter, right? And I realize I can't just have things on display, all right? I don't have a museum here. So I just, when I buy things now that I really have to have, I have to have a use for it.
Do you throw out a previous item every time you get a new collectible?
I don't specifically do that, but lately, the past few years, I do replenish, so I also get rid of stuff. You know, I just, if I'm not using it, I donate it.
What are your guilty pleasures? What are your what sector of the junk picking do you find yourself drawn to?
Yeah, and it's interesting you use those words because, you know, if I go to a vintage place, I always go to the junkier section because I love finding that treasure, right? I love getting the best deal. I do collect alarm clocks, old alarm clocks. I have quite a few of those.
That's cool.
I have some bowling pins, and I've stopped because
pins.
Yeah, what can I just like the way they look, so I don't really have a use for them, but I really love the way they look. Same with like thread spools. I like to put those in big, huge jars, or, you know, big bowls, and and typewriters. I have quite a few.
Oh my goodness, typewriters! Holy mackerel!
Yeah.
How many Underwoods do you have? How many are you an Underwood fan?
Yes, I'm looking at them right now. I've got two Underwoods, and I have, this one's so old, the Oliver Typewriter Company, manufactured right here in Chicago. Those I do put out because, you know, being a former news person, I just got to have my typewriters.
You could collect elevators because the Otis Company was based here in Chicago.
You know, I always wanted to be an elevator operator.
Does the interior of your home look like the set of Sanford and Son?
No, but maybe outside a little bit.
Oh, great. You put it in the yard?
I also put stuff out in the yard.
Oh, my goodness. Neighbors must love you.
I upcycle. Yeah, I think one of my neighbors did call me Sanford and Sons, and I don't talk to him anymore.
I can imagine why. Judy Pilek is here, co-host of the Bruce St. James Show. What's the situation regarding masks? We were talking about this a little bit on the phone today. I went to a big box store in Vernon Hills, and they had a little sign up, please don't hoard the masks because people are looking for these N95s. And that led us into a discussion. You couldn't find any furnace filters? Are they in short supply?
They are. Well, you know what? If you, I don't know if you do much shopping, John, but if you go to the stores now, you will see that the shelves are a little bit bare. Not too bad, but yeah, they're not manufacturing things, right? There's the whole supply chain problem. There's weather issues. It's been a nightmare. You can still get things, but yeah, I happen to go to the Ace Hardware, where I normally would buy a box of furnace filters. None. They said they'd been waiting for months for the particular one that I needed. So I, of course, had to get some, so I had to pay three times as much and get the ones that I would not normally buy, but I did because I needed them. And they said that they had been waiting literally every day. They said, you know, every day we think they're going to come in, and they just don't come in.
I had the same experience with some item that I've been waiting an awful long time for, and I call over every couple weeks, and not in yet. It's not that it hasn't been manufactured. It's sitting off Long Beach.
True, yes. They have no one to take it off. The boat's sitting there, no one to take it off the boat, no one to drive it in the truck. I mean, it's like a perfect storm, right? But the fact is, you have to look. I mean, since I couldn't find them at Ace, I did find them somewhere else. So they are out there. But now as a consumer, you have to do a little bit more work.
you know, we got ourselves in there. We painted ourselves into this own corner. We wanted to buy everything a dime on a dollar from Indonesia, from Bangladesh, from China, from Vietnam, because everybody wants everything as cheap as possible. We ran all of our manufacturers out of business here in the States, and now we're paying the price for it.
Yep, absolutely. And when we talk about masks, you have to be careful when you're the N95s or the KN95s, which are manufactured in China. And, you know, they've got a lot of the, you know, the fake masks out there that you, now you have to be an even better consumer because you have to, you know, be able to distinguish between what's verified. And actually, the number one thing you should do if you're going to buy those N95 masks is look for the NIOSH approval. And I know you're going to ask me what that means tonight. It's like an OSHA thing. So that means that it's approved here in the U.S. and it's the right mask to use.
Let me just play the part of a conservative talk show host. If it's an OSHA-type thing, that's just liberal propaganda.
All right, well, then buy the one from China. And if it's misspelled, especially buy it.
Well, the store that I went to, and I don't want to mention the name of the store because I like it, and it's a major, major retailer. I did look on the box, though, for where it was manufactured, and I did not see, and I would imagine anybody that makes something in the United States, like pet toys and pet food and what have you, they make a big deal out of being manufactured in the United States, and I always buy that, but I couldn't find made in the USA on any of the items on the shelf regarding masks.
And that's not necessarily bad, it's just that you need to make sure it's a legitimate mask. So, if it, you know, it's...
The ones I bought did have that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the ones I bought did have that acronym. I remember that on the box.
NIOSH, yeah. So that's a good one.
Are you wearing a mask everywhere now?
Yep.
Are you doing the show from the studio?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to wear a mask. Everybody has to be masked up. Yeah.
Now, in the studio, we'll take the mask off because we are 6 feet apart. But, yeah, it's every time you get up, you got to put that mask back on. And, you know, I now am going to have to look for some N95s because I do have cloth ones, which now we understand aren't as good. But I got to tell you, I'm a fashionista, John, and I like my cloth masks.
Yeah, I found a cloth mask that's big enough for my Dutch head. The N95s that I just bought... They're tiny. They make my head look even fatter than it already is. I need to find extra large. I don't know. I looked everywhere for extra large N95s. I don't think they make those.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But you want it to be tight. I know, and people do complain that they're uncomfortable. They are, and they've got the little metal piece on the nose, and it's not fun.
One good thing about these N95s, and I've only worn them a couple times when I go out, obviously, but I can wear them with my glasses. Because they don't fog up my glasses because they are tighter.
Yeah, such a problem with the fogging of the glasses.
Well, I hope that I can find the N95s. I'll look for Made in the USA. That's great advice, and I appreciate you popping on. Are you running solo tomorrow morning?
No, I'll be in with Andrea Darlis.
Oh, she's terrific.
Yeah.
All right, I'll be listening.
It'll be the girls' hour.
And as we were talking about on the phone, I know how frustrating it is to work with Ray, and just... I'll send you some more tips, okay?
He's exhausting. His energy level is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
But he's kind of easy on the eyes, so not too bad.
That's what he's counted on his entire career. Ask him next time you talk to him. I ruined his chances to be a major player at CMT Country Music Television years ago because of an incident we had on our show in Nashville. He was not able to go. They gave him an audition opportunity, and because of something he blames me for, although it wasn't my fault, he wasn't able to make the audition, and they never called him back. So the downward trajectory of Ray Stevens' career is completely blamed on me in his mind.
Well, and now it makes sense why he only has bad things to say about you.
Well, there's more to that. All right, the two sides of every story. Judy Pilek, thank you for jumping on. Good luck tomorrow morning.
Thanks, John.
Thank
you. Tune in 5:30 a.m. bright and early.
I feed the dogs at 5:30. I'll be listening. Tell Ms. Darlis I say hello as well.
You're listening to John Howell, Essential Cuts, on 890 WLS.
A beloved St. Paddy's Day tradition is returning to the Beverly and Morgan Park neighborhoods this March after a two-year hiatus. The parade dates back to 1979. Unfortunately, after an especially rowdy celebration in 2009, it was put on a three-year hiatus. after, as Alderman O'Shea said, the event had been hijacked by idiots who drank themselves into a stupor. The good news is it's been sorely needed in the community for the past 22 months. It's been very rough in the last 10 days, even more difficult. Again, this is a statement from Alderman Matt O'Shea, who I saw he's welcoming back the Southside Irish Parade this March. And so is the co-chair, the Parades Committee co-chair, Don Laracy, who joins us now on the Big 89. Don, congratulations. I'm glad to see the parade come back.
Thank you very much. We're cautiously excited about the parade coming back. And I know there's a lot of people in the neighborhood and the business community down here that are just as excited as the committee is.
Coming up on 2 years now, I remember when both the downtown parade and your parade had to be, we thought at that time, maybe postponed. It's been a couple years, and it's a good sign that the parades are coming back, at least the Southside parade. Any special stipulations regarding the continuing COVID necessities as far as this year?
You know, we're gonna follow both the city and state guidelines and the advice that they want to give on having events like this. In the city already, we've had some outdoor events like White Sox games, Bears games, concerts, fireworks, things like that. So we think we can be able to have our events safely, and people will still be able to enjoy it.
How big do you expect the parade to be this year, 2022?
Well, it's really hard to put a number estimate on there. I think we're going to aim for the same amount of participants, which usually is around 100 floats, 100 entries. As far as the crowd goes, there's multiple factors with that. It's weather or, comfort level with people, especially with COVID and stuff like that. So from a people number, it's a little bit difficult to gauge, but we're excited. We're getting ready.
Date is March 13th. Am I to assume it'll be the usual one-mile parade starting at 103rd Street and Western and then moving along Western at about down to 115th?
That's correct. And we usually have a 12 o'clock kickoff.
I've seen kickoffs at the Southside Parade. You know, the parade had to be canceled back, I think, after the 2009 parade, and you made some changes then to make it more family-friendly. Are those still in place?
Absolutely. Once we came back in the years since then, we really wanted to make sure it was a family-friendly event where, people could come out with their kids and enjoy it, and adults can come out as two. And, we work with the Chicago Police Department and some extra security staff there on place to make sure that the event is safe for everyone who wants to come out and join and celebrate and to make sure it's, kids are comfortable there and families are comfortable there. And, that's really important to the community, the neighborhood, and both businesses and the people that are marching in the parade.
How happy is Alderman Matt O'Shea that it's been scheduled for this year?
Matt did an interview we saw yesterday where, he's excited for the parade to come back. And, Matt's been a supporter for us, and he's aware of how important it is, not only for our community and our neighborhood, but also for those businesses that line Western Avenue. So, as far as I'm aware and from his interview, that everything is in support from him, and we're excited to move forward.
Don, for organizations that want to participate, do you have a website where they can fill out an application?
We do. We can get information by, you can send us an email at info@southsideirishparade.org. We do have our website as well at southsideirishparade.org as well, where there have some information up there as well. But, our social media channels, you can reach out to someone on social media. Those are monitored as well, and we'll get back to everyone as quickly as possible.
God, I'm so happy it's coming back. I'll be there this year. Don Laracy, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Looking forward to it, John. Thank you very much.
John Howell, Essential Cuts. Check back every weekday for another episode of John Howell, Essential Cuts on 890 WLS.